This program is produced by Alternative Radio. We're an independent nonprofit in our 38th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature such voices as Chris Hedges, Medea Benjamin, Max Blumenthal, and Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. To get copies of today's program, Sarah Lee Whitson on Gaza, international law, and the Biden presidency, and for the classic Noam Chomsky book, Propaganda and the Public Mind, just call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. Just call us, 1-800-444-1977. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamyan. Thank you for listening.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO, Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Did you know radio is over 100 years old? Actually, radio spans three centuries and two millennia. It emerged in the late 19th century as wireless telegraphy and thrived in the 20th century as the first mass medium. It remains relevant in the 21st century, evolving with digital technology and modern culture. Italian inventor Guglielmo Marconi received the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1909 for his major contributions to its development. The process for sending signals over the air via electromagnetic waves was predicted as early as the 1860s and invented in stages by brilliant scientists and engineers from all over the world. This fact has been brought to you by UNESCO and KBOO Community Radio for World Radio Day. Consider contributing to independent grassroots radio by going to kboo.fm/give or texting KBOO to 4432.
From Pacifica Radio in San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, union activists in New York City standing strong against Israeli genocide. Also, police violence and racist lying about refugees and the homeless in the big rotten apple known as New York City also. And a car caravan for immigrant and refugee rights kicking off from the U.S.-Mexico border. And our own Miguel Gavilan Molina is right in the middle. All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. We're going to be dealing with that caravan in just one second, but I want to share with you, I just have to say this, there is The slaughter is continuing in Gaza. The killing is continuing. We're going to be talking about that later on in the broadcast with Mimi Rosenberg, an activist, an attorney, labor activist in New York City. And, you know, they're fighting it through labor. So, but I just want to say that as we speak, as we talk, there is an expanding slaughter of the United States government. They keep saying they're trying to restrain Netanyahu and he's over the top, but they keep arming his killing fields. It's unbelievable. All right, I said it. You are listening to Flashpoints. This is your daily investigative news magazine, and we come to you every weekday from 5 to 6 over the Pacifica Radio Network, over KPFA, the first free speech listener-supported radio station in this country. And we're proud of it, and we believe in free speech. Joining us up top is Flor Martinez. She's the coordinator for the Caravan of Immigrant and Refugee Rights in support of, in the middle of the fight for registry, Bill 1511. We're going to be talking a lot about that and why that's incredibly important. Flor Martinez, welcome to Flashpoints.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, it's good to have you with us. Why don't you begin by just giving us a brief outline? What is the Caravan, and what's it all about? What's it meant to do? What are the focuses?
Yeah, so the Caravan is meant to educate our communities on the urgency for a pathway to citizenship because of advancing technology like AI. And then there's a whole conversation around AI and farm workers and what that looks like. And then also the solution, which is advocating and taking action on the registry bills, H.R. 1511 and S. 2606, which these bills will provide a pathway to citizenship for millions of undocumented community members that have been waiting since the last time we had immigration reform, which was in 1986. So from the 14th to the 17th, we're going to be going from San Isidro to San Diego with some stops along the way.
And we want to talk all about that. It's going to be a beautiful journey and interesting vehicles. And actually it will be joining up with some significant actions all along the way. Let me just ask you to step back a second. I'm sure you are with many immigrants and rights activists are horrified at the way in which Congress has batted this possibility, a so-called immigration rights. It turned it into almost a jail sentence, or maybe a jail sentence. You want to talk about what's going on and how that hits you at the gut?
Definitely. They've been criminalizing this group of community members, and it's time that they get empowered and get educated on their rights, but also know how to take action, right? And know how change is created, which is like advocating for bills like this that turn into laws, right? That would make for change. And so we're super excited for like La Caravana, because yes, there's been a lot of attacks in our undocumented community, and even fighting misinformation along the way, right? Like, you know, undocumented community members pay taxes, billions in taxes. And so just kind of informing the community and just getting the word out through social media as well. So we know being out there definitely brings eyes.
So getting the word out. And so tell us a little bit more about the journey. It starts down south in California. Lay that out for us. And there's a whole sort of itinerary of meetings and actions along the way.
Yeah, definitely. So first we're going to be in San Isidro at the border. That's going to be more of a private demonstration, especially because I know they're getting over some floods over there in San Diego. But then where we first meet up is going to be in Chicano Park Museum, right there in San Diego at 12 p.m., and so we'll be doing a reception, a rally inside the Chicano Park Museum. And then at 2 p.m. we head out to Riverside. And all this is on Valentine's Day, February 14th. And then through the 17th, but this is on the first day. Because from there we go to Riverside. And at 6 p.m. we have a teach-in where we tell everybody about the AI and the registry bill, and just have videos and images on screen as well. And so that's what that looks like. And then the next day in Los Angeles, we're going to be there February 15th. We're going to do a caravan through LA, making a stop at the federal building where our partner is Chirla for these actions. We're holding a press conference, banner drop, and rally. And from there, we're going to be driving through the Cajones, through Whittier, East LA, probably Beverly Hills, Hollywood, and just going to get the word out, right? And then the next day, we're going to be in Delano at the 40 Acres at 4 p.m. Talking to the farm workers and getting them in on this. You know, they're the ones that are going to be really impacted through this technology, so they deserve to know, right, and be prepared. And so the day after that, we go from Delano to Sacramento, and along the way, we're riding with the lowriders, and we'll be in Sacramento at 2 p.m., and from there, at Southside Park. And then from there, we march over to the Capitol. And that concludes the caravan, La Caravana.
And what does it mean? Talk a little bit about what's behind this. What kinds of situations are people forced into because they don't have the documentation that they need? Well, how vulnerable, particularly women, how vulnerable do they become because they don't have the rights and the ability to strike back and to resist all kinds of horrible behavior because they're always afraid of being deported, and it happens so often. Let's put a human face on this. Well, what happens to some people because they don't have this kind of support and documentation?
Yeah, so for example, there's the farm workers that have been working the fields for like 60 years now. I mean, you have like 70-year-olds still picking your produce. And for example, they don't have a social security they could just retire with. They pretty much work until their last day. And then they deserve to, you know, have that access through a retirement fund, or especially also people that need the right to work. Like right now, if farm workers are replaced by technology, they need the right to work. If not, where you're going to have all these displaced farm workers. So it's important to think of those situations. And that's just, you know, some of the people impacted. There's just so many different stories out there. It's not easy being undocumented. I mean, you don't get to see family members from across the border. You don't have the right to work where you want. So you take under the table jobs that you don't feel like you have rights at, and who just dehumanize you and just don't protect you as a laborer. Like, and then just being under the shadows, like you said, like they don't get to speak up the way they should because they're afraid. And people shouldn't be afraid to like speak up about things that impact them, you know. So I think it's important to have that voice. And then getting the right to vote, so they could vote on local, state, federal elections. Like, their voice matters, but they can't vote, so it's hard for them to even feel a part of these, our communities. And, you know, they're indigenous people, so it's like they're native to the land, so it doesn't make sense. So it's important to bring awareness to just all of it and create change, right? With the tools we have now, like social media. And California is pretty progressive, so they're already on board, right? But we also lead the way, so other states gotta get on board. I think after this is actually the trial run, we're going to do a caravan to Washington, D.C. later on.
Of course, because this is federal. This is a federal legislation. This is a registry bill. 1511 happens at the national level because it's for citizenship. So it does certainly make sense for you to launch more caravans in that direction, heading east to where the power base or some of the power base is in the United States. Again, we're speaking with Flor Martinez. She's the coordinator of the Caravan of Immigrant and Refugee Rights. They're fighting for registration Bill 1511 at the federal level. And I'm wondering, what kind of support do you have? Are local politicians, state politicians, are you getting special support from the Latino members of Congress, of the senator from California, for instance?
Yeah, actually, Alex Padilla introduced S-2606, and Zoe Lofgren introduced H.R. 1511. And they're both in California, Alex Padilla's senator. And so we have that support. I mean, we also have support from, the United Farm Workers, the Chavez Foundation, the SW Foundation, Farm Worker Justice, Shirla, the American Indian Movement, Celebration Nation, Amigos de Guadalupe. There's a lot of organizations on board and a lot of community leaders on board because this bill just makes so much sense. I mean, it's just asking to update the year that people can qualify to apply for citizenship, right? And that's updating the registry bill, which is the last time we had immigration reform, 1986. That was the same law that gave millions citizenship. A lot of people's parents and grandparents, and now we're asking them, hey, update the year so people can qualify because it's outdated now. And so it's pretty like simple, right? And so there's no reason they should say no. So it's like, well, let's give it everything we have, right? It's the perfect time because especially it's election year, and it doesn't look good for even being like DACA, right? It doesn't look good for anybody. So it's like we need to go hard already. We need to start informing our communities and also empowering them. So that's the best thing to do, right? That's the best way to fight misinformation. Like people speak up for themselves.
That's right.
And we need our people to speak up for themselves. So we need to be out there so they see it and they could join us. And it's just, the more of us, the better, right?
How do you personally come to this? What brings you to this movement? Here you are. You are, in fact, the coordinator of this caravan that we're talking about, which is an amazing thing that's happening. You sound pretty young. Where does this start for you? Where did this begin for you?
Well, for me, I mean, I came to the U.S. when I was 3 years old. I have DACA, which is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, which, you know, now undocumented youth can't qualify for because it was stopped 2 years ago. I mean, we can renew, but they new people can't apply. And I was also a farm worker when I was 14 years old. And so I've just been really involved in the movement. And the groups almost, we actually all met at the efforts of the UFW for AB 2183. It was for farm workers to have the right to unionize without fear of retaliation and just being able to do it from home. And we all met there, and so we're still going, right? Like, if I continue.
Somebody, you've been in this movement for a long time, I guess. You got an early start, and the whole thing about the Dreamers and the way that was sort of thrown around, it really does seem like these crucial rights that you're now fighting for, Floor, are, you know, this has been your life struggle, and they're still playing games with it in Congress. It must make you pretty angry to see the way in which this becomes like a way in which one side or the other, the Dems and the Republicans, to play games with so many people's lives. So I'm glad to hear that you're involved. How old are you now?
I'm 28.
28. So you've been in this most of you came at three? you've been in this most of your life. And what else do we need to know? How about information? If people want to get more information, if they want to join or support, what would you like people to do?
Yeah, no, you guys could check out like the itinerary with the information you need at SomosPoderDelPueblo.com. Somos is with an X in the front. And so that's where you can get information. And yeah, no, I think it's time that the undocumented community stands up and gets the citizenship they deserve. I mean, it's just, the country wouldn't be able to run without us. So it's important to be able to have the same rights as everybody else, right? And I think it's time. I think it's that generation is here that just is fed up and going to do something about it. Like, using the tools that we have now that weren't available to those before us that have fought for this for 38 years now. So we definitely want to make sure we do our part. And so this is it.
Wow. Well, congratulations on being a part of this. We know that senior producer on this show, Miguel Gavilán Molina, is definitely involved and is going to be traveling along with you. We're going to be talking with you, I'm sure, and Miguel and others along the route. We're excited for you. Again, we're hoping that you and the crew will keep us informed about this incredibly important action that you're taking in terms of this special caravan for immigrant and refugee rights. The time is right now for these rights, and it's horrific that people are playing games with this. By the way, what's the governor have to say? Has he been a strong supporter?
Yeah,
or has he been out of town?
I have to check on that.
So it's not obvious to you yet.
It's not, but I know we have 77 reps co-sponsoring the bill, and we need 100. So if there's a call to action today, it's call your representatives and make sure they're on board, because we need 100 and we're at 77. So we can take it to the next level and just play their game.
Give us the website again.
So you can go to Somos with an X, somospoderdelpueblo.com.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us, and we'll be talking to you along the way.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right. Be safe. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back to labor actions, what labor has done, might do, can do to help resist this brutal, murderous, continuing genocide. Stay with us.
1, 2, 3. Heard she was a sleeper. Glad you found a dreamer. Boring life is sweeter, but bitter between them. Moved out of the city. Got your love a ring. She told you it was pretty, and that was that. Sweet.
Listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. The situation in the Gaza and the West Bank, particularly Gaza now, is absolutely horrific. This is, I edited this wire copy from AP. A series of Israeli strikes early Monday hit Rafah, the city on the southern edge of the Gaza Strip where 1.4 million Palestinians have fled to escape fighting elsewhere in the four-month Israel slaughter. Israel has been signaling its ground offensive in Gaza may soon target the densely populated city of the at the Egyptian border. Well, that's happening now. Now, do you believe this? On Sunday, the White House said President, I'm calling him genocide, Joe Biden, had warned four times indicted, I put in the four times indicted, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, that Israel should not conduct a military operation against Hamas in Rafah without a, quote, credible and executable plan to protect the civilians. Well, there ain't no plan. But right now, as we speak, the Israelis are using U.S. weaponry to bomb the living hell out of folks in there. I guess this is the fourth or the fifth place they were told to go to be safe, the safe zones that the Israelis are providing in this killing field, this genocide. It's extraordinary. Again, I don't know what else to say. They're still doing it. And I think it's now 100 and something like 160 journalists have been killed, murdered, slaughtered in 147 days. That makes the Guinness Book. Joining us is somebody who I've known for a long time, who I met at our sister station, WBAI, in New York City, Mimi Rosenberg. Mimi Rosenberg is an attorney with over 30 years' experience in practice of poverty law at the Legal Aid Society. She's a producer of, as I was telling you, the country's oldest, longest-running, award-winning labor show, Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report, over WBAI, and it's syndicated around the country. And Mimi Rosenberg, it is good to have you on Flashpoints.
I am absolutely honored to be with you and must compliment you for your decades of cutting-edge broadcasts for equal rights and justice. It's great to be with you, Dennis.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Well, let's start. You're an attorney. You know the law. Let's start in the genocide front. The slaughter is continuing as we speak. I assume you accept the South Africans' premise that Israel is committing a massive genocide and it's ongoing.
Almost decidedly. As a matter of fact, I would go further and say that since 1948, with the expulsion of between 750,000 and 1 million Palestinians and execution of many more during that period of time, that there has been a rolling Holocaust and multiple genocides that have ensued against the people of the historic land of Palestine.
It is extraordinary how, I can't quite get it, how Biden, you know, he puts out the pro-peace and he ships over one of those shipments, I've been beating this one, 5,800 2,000-pound bunker buster bombs to kill what's already dead. I mean, it is brutal. Now, the United States is supplying a lot of the weaponry. Who makes the bombs?
The bombs are made by workers, and much of the weaponry, the armaments that go into actually making the bombs are made in UAW, that's United Automobile Workers Organized Plants. And I'm pleased to say that there have been at least community activity in protest of the manufacture there and selling to Israel. But we are responsible for both making much of the weaponry that is sent over to Israel. And I will tell you, it's such a terrifying, perverse irony that actually the IDF asked for smaller bombs because the 2,000-pound bombs were so destructive that the consequences were not completely useful, and they wanted actually smaller bombs because it was overkill, or what President Biden has the audacity to characterize as over the top versus the genocide that is being perpetrated. We make the bombs, we finance them, and we make them in union plants.
Now, are folks, workers, talking about this? Is there much interest in... I know that there's been a bunch of actions here at the ports. There have been some battles, some resistance in terms of shipments of weapons and spare parts. What's happening in New York? What's happening in the groups that you're a part of and the kinds of actions that you've been a part of? Tell us what kind of resistance there might be inside the workers' circle, if you will.
Well, I want to just couch that by saying it took at least 10 years for us in the progressive community, the communities of social conscience and the workers' movement to really rally against the colonialist war that was ensuing in Vietnam. So while it has been forever here in terms of people who are experiencing the genocide, it's really quite fantastic that within 100 days or so of time, we have managed to rally labor around the country in a way that we haven't for decades to the political cause. Against colonialism, against settler colonialism. And what's been happening on this coast is that labor for Palestine, labor against the war, and various unions have taken quite seriously the genocide that is being created or being allowed to ensue in our name, and taking up the cause of, one, most strategically, resolutions for ceasefires, two, to support boycotts, divestment, and sanction against organizations, our own unions that are supporting, for example, the pseudo labor organization, the Histadrut in Israel, to support other Zionist-related organizations. And that is enormous in its import. There was a point, for example, when the UAW, a generally progressive-minded, if you will, union, maybe not so much in the last few years, but hopefully with the new renewed leadership under Sean Fain, the UAW at one point had $768,000, for example, invested in Israeli bonds. And it took the Arab workers of Detroit in conjunction with black workers from Detroit to protest and get the union to divest in the support for Israel and its various organizations and for its colonialist project, which is what Zionism is. So we now, in much shorter period of time, have not only raised resolutions in a number of major unions, and that is the American Postal Workers, the UE, the United Electrical Workers Union, the United Automobile Workers, even Randy Weingarten's, the American Federation of Teachers, have at least, and it's a good start, come out with a strong resolution for a ceasefire now, no more genocide in our name, and now we are working further towards getting them to divest in the monies that they have invested in any of the institutions of Zionism functioning in Israel that are perpetuating the occupation, the genocide and the apartheid type structure of Israel against Palestinians.
Isn't there a song, something to the title, "I Almost Lost Detroit"? I'm thinking he this is a guy who touts his union connection. He did recently visit the state of Michigan, but apparently in a number of different places he wasn't welcome. Were the workers a part of that?
Well, it's absolutely true. I must say that one of the things that we did in the labor movement on the East Coast is mobilize significant contingents. It was great to see labor jackets and labor posters and dinky little labor hats, those kind of cruddy paper hats that we wear, at the mass demonstration of 400,000 people, roughly, that took place just a couple of weeks ago in Washington, D.C., and the one immediately before that in November, on November 4th. So labor was there as a contingent, and I raised that because one of the things that was very clear, and I'm still not sure that our labor leadership has gotten that, and that's something to talk about, that you are not Biden. You are not Biden going to have free votes with our union members from our unions in the name of and continuing to perpetrate genocide and have some mealy-mouthed statements about surgical strikes to protect the population of Palestinians. 27,000 have already been killed, plus 40% of which are children. So we were there in Washington, D.C., and on full display, and it was glorious because, as we know, Dennis, the power of the working class is mighty, but we still have miles to go, and that includes our beloved Sean Fain, who made a decision without any participation of the membership whatsoever from the UAW to support Biden for re-election without extracting any promises around any particular economic or political issue, and certainly nothing after we pass the resolution, after we pass the resolution in support of the Palestinians and against genocide, to do nothing, to force nothing, to demand nothing from the Biden administration in response to pushing for a ceasefire and a cessation of the funding of what heretofore has been $3.8 billion a year, or $10 million plus per day. So we were there. Labor is on the move, the rank and file, but we still have our bureaucrats, or even our newly elected leadership, to be held responsible democratically to its members, making a decision about who to support or not support in an election, and particularly to demand, and the UAW, for goodness, to demand in Detroit and other places that you will not get a vote, Biden, unless you significantly and meaningfully alter your position and support a ceasefire now and a cessation of the transfer of funds and diplomatic might to the Israelis. Must stop. No more genocide in our name, and that goes to our unions, even though our rank and file has been stepping up to the plate.
So there really is a struggle at the leadership. What is it that they're owned by the lobby? We know that Biden is the number one recipient of money from the Israeli lobbyists. He's doubled the next one in line. So they own him. All these guys need big money to keep doing what they do, to keep their positions, even the union people. So where is that at this point? How are there any cracks in the armor?
Well, I think there are cracks in the armor, because I think there are. The fact that we ran Randy Weingarten, who has been a staunch champion of Israel for decades, to a position of ceasefire is not insignificant. And that was, again, the pressure of the rank and file, including penetrating events where she was getting various awards, like at the Museum of the City of New York, where a coalition of cross-union rank and fileists broke into the event and took over the stage and insisted that she be held accountable for not advocating for a ceasefire, and particularly coming out of a profession like education and education of the young. It's unconscionable. So I think we had a major role in forcing that. On the other hand, you have people who were supported by the rank and file, like O'Brien in the Teamsters, and you have even people like Sean Fain, who ran on a democracy platform against the corrupt UAW leadership, many of whom are in jail now, and they still haven't managed to take on the mechanism of democratic discourse within the union and for the union members to make the determination how we should or should not participate in elections, what candidates should or shouldn't be run, and who we are going to support in a presidential contest, and under what conditions if we do. So we still have a lot of work in the union movement to democratize our venues of expression, and we also have still a great deal to do in terms of weeding out what is still a hierarchy and a hierarchical structure that is quite often come out of Jim Crowism, that is oftentimes subject to the same racist, white supremacist realities that exist in the society at large. And we have to also rid ourselves of economic unionism and begin for the workers themselves to see that our unions and our worker associations must be units for political empowerment of the working class and not merely negotiator for wages and benefits. And as we do that, when people see that as a stepping stone to, I believe, a state power for the working class, we will be in a far better position to take even the best of our union leaders and demand that our unions be democratized and that the rank and file make the decision as to the fear that our union leaders have, such as a Sean Fain, no doubt over what is a juggernaut of fascism. With Trump in the lead, I'm sure that has a great deal to do with why Sean Fain made the decision that he did. But it was precipitous. It was undemocratic. And there has to be far greater attention, as I indicated earlier, paid to the Islamophobia that exists, the racism that exists, and the support for our workers of Arab ancestry who are losing hundreds of members of their families through a genocide that is tacitly being supported and oftentimes financed by our own union.
All right. This is wonderful to hear you, Amy. I just have a minute left, and I want to ask you, I have a minute question, but let's not wait so long to meet again, or we'll be dead. How important do you think it is now for people to be in the street?
It is desperately important. People may not even realize that while the mass media has been suggesting that they are waiting on the bombardment of Rafah, the fact of the matter is that during the Super Bowl, which is surely no accident, surely no accident for that distraction, that they had already begun the bombardment and the ground offensives, which really never stopped, but has been extenuated and emphasized in Rafah. So is it important? It is incredibly important. Incredibly important for people of goodwill, for people of conscience, of human sensitivity, and people who will not buy into this canard of anti-Semitism or self-hating Jews because they uncouple Judaism from Zionism. It is critical for us to be in the streets. It is essential for us not only to be in the streets with the demand of ceasefire, but the demand for the day after, which is for self-determination, for a free, free Palestine. And I hope from the river to the sea, the Jordan River to the Mediterranean, hopefully a one state, a secular, non-theocratic state with equal rights and justice, the right of return and reparatory justice for all of the inhabitants of the historic landmass of Palestine. Absolutely be there. Be there.
Beautiful. Thank you. How do people listen to your show, Mimi? How do people listen to your show? What's the best way?
They move to New York.
And if they can't do that,
they can listen. We certainly, if you can, you can go to the archives, wbai.org, and you will find Building Bridges there and the other program, Equal Rights and Justice. So you can stream it online. And, how lovely it would be if KPFA picked it up.
Highly recommended.
I hope they support. But they have.
Well, I certainly do. Yes, and I'm gotta go. I'm gotta go. Let's pick it up on the next round. Mimi, thanks for joining us on Flashpoints. You are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back.
Across my thoughts, seem to blow my ship from course. And my cannons blaze and I sail into shady seas. And I throw away the maps and then contemplate the map. What, tell me, how hard can it be? I see the sum of me and you comes out equally unto. Don't care what they say, the magic number isn't three. Deep side, not cold, incidental. Lightning, under pressure, like the weather, elemental. And what starts off as a sneeze, sharp it turns into a breeze. And before you know, you got yourself a hurricane. It blows hard and hurts my eyes, and the windmill in my mind starts to buckle. Simply cannot take the strain. I just pull my collar tight and keep my head down. Get through another blustery day.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. We're on every weekday from 5 to 6 over the Pacifica Radio Network. That's your electronic leaflet for information. We are joined by Robert Genji. He's the founder of Police Reform Organizing Project. That's PROP. He has been an activist, community organizer, and public policy advocate in New York City for over 40 years. He is recognized as an expert. He's a recognized expert on criminal justice. And it is good to have you with us, Bob. Welcome, Bob Genji, to Flashpoints.
Right. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you with us. Well, let's get right to it. There's an incident that happened at a homeless center. Set this up for us, because there's a dispute about what happened between the police and the refugees. So
right.
There was a push in and a shove in and more.
The initial news about it came with a video that the NYPD released to the press and to the world. And what the video showed was a group of people who were called migrants. And I think basically the thinking was, and I'm not sure if it's accurate, it might be that they were recent immigrants who came to New York City. And they were standing in front of a building on Times Square. And the claim was that they were blocking pedestrian traffic, and the cops asked them to move. And one of the men became confrontational and pushed back. And the cop tried to one way or another make him move or arrest him, and he began a fight with the cop, and then the other members of the group joined in, threw the cops to the ground and kicked them. And the video that was first presented to the public just showed a bunch of men, again probably migrants or recent immigrants, kicking and pushing cops that were on the ground. And it became a cause célèbre in New York City. The local press, particularly the Daily News and the New York Post, given it a lot of attention. Commentators on television and pundits elsewhere calling the men a wolf pack group, calling them thugs, and scratching their heads about what does that civilization come to, kind of thing. Critical of the Manhattan DA, Alvin Bragg, because he didn't move quickly to indict all of the men and make sure they were held on Rikers Island until a case was finally resolved. And so it appeared as if the men had, without provocation, attacked these two police officers, again, thrown into the ground, and were kicking them. And there was a lot of outrage at that. And about a week and a half later, late last week, in fact, Bragg called a press conference.
The police chief.
Along with Eric Adams, who's the mayor of the city, to announce new developments in the case and who they indicted, who was being held on Rikers, that kind of thing. But along with that announcement, Bragg's office presented to the public a longer video that I think got lifted from the cops' body cameras, although I'm not exactly sure what the source of the videos were. And the videos showed, in fact, that the cops had lied, that NYPD spokespeople, particularly the chief of detectives, a man named Joseph Kenney, had just misrepresented what happened. And what the video shows is a couple of critical things that directly conflict with the NYPD's account. One is the men were clearly not blocking pedestrian traffic. People were able to walk by freely and without being hindered. So that calls into question why the cops even approached these men and told them to move. The second was the man that was a man named Brito, B-R-I-T-O, who was identified as the instigator of the confrontation and the fight with the police officers. He was also innocent of any wrongdoing. Cop approached him. It's clear on the video. He kind of waves his hand at Brito's jacket, and he hits the jacket, and he says, "Vamos," you know, move along, but trying to speak to him in Spanish, presuming that Brito only understood Spanish. So Brito raises his hand and says, "Don't touch me," says it in Spanish, so maybe he does only speak Spanish. But he's not confrontational. He's basically asking to be respected. And eventually, Brito and all the other men start to leave, basically complying with the direction, the directive from the two cops. And Brito is also pushing the baby carriage. I don't think there's a baby in it, although it's not clear. The press speculated he had his belongings in the carriage. So he's pushing the carriage. The other men are kind of a step or two ahead of him. And then Brito chants a song or some kind of dialogue from a telenova, and he refers to the cop as Ugly Betty. Now, there's, the cop then attacks him, and the only thing that I could speculate was the cop took offense at the way he thought Brito was mocking him.
So the they attacked them? What do you mean attacked? What do you mean attacked? They attacked
him. I'll tell you. He grabs him by the collar. He throws him up. He slams his body into a building. And he's grabbing him by the neck. I don't think he slams his head into the building. That's not clear. But he slams his body into the building. It was an assault. And they tussle. They fall to the ground. And the cop, and he appeared to be a big guy on the video, lands on top of Brito. And at that point, Brito's companions turn around. They were walking away, and they come back, and they start to kick and push the cops in an attempt to free Brito from the cop's body laying on top of him. And that's what happened. And the number of men, I don't know what the number is, have been arrested. Bail is being set, and they're being held on Rikers Island. They face charges, assault charges, which could likely, well, if they're convicted, they will end up in state prison in New York. And there's a high likelihood that that's going to happen, given the politics and the pseudo-outrage that surrounded the case. And in reality...
And then they'll get deported, right? They'll serve the time and then get deported. Yeah.
That's very possible, depending on what their status is. And we don't know enough about them and what their status actually is, and,
yeah,
and
right.
You know, their right to be here and whether or not they are, in fact, immigrants that don't have papers yet. So and the problem with this is, in addition to the fact that the cops themselves handled the situation very badly, they were aggressive, one of them was violent, that the NYPD, with the chief of detectives being a spokesperson, misrepresented the truth of what happened. Another word for that would be they lied. And they even continued to stick their story after Bragg had released the full picture presented by the extended video, which showed what had actually happened. And what's troubling about this, I'm repeating myself a little bit, is that these guys, they're in trouble. Very likely to face prison time, very likely to face deportation. And they were not doing anything. They were literally and figuratively minding their own business. The two cops are the ones who should be punished. They were provocative. They initiated the confrontation, not the men. And they should be, at the very least, fired, because we shouldn't have police officers with all the authority and their power that they have patrolling our streets.
Wow. So I guess we just have a couple of minutes, but I guess this kind of incident where, you know, if the police are aggressive, essentially they flip the script and turn it into they had no choice but to restrain and arrest.
Right.
One of those?
Right. Now, often, and you're exactly on point. Often, not every time, but often enough, when someone is arrested and charged with resisting arrest or assault on a police officer, what it means in reality is the cops beat up the people, tases the people, and the way they cover for that is they charge the people with, again, resisting arrest. There's another charge that's called obstructing government administration, and that's what people face. And the underlying, how to put this, truth about this incident and how it all unfolded and how the NYPD misrepresented the truth is it's not an isolated occurrence. The NYPD regularly misrepresents the truth. Cops regularly lie on the stand when they have to justify why they arrested somebody and charge them with whatever the charge is. But there's very little, if anything, that's effectively done about it, even though it's widely known that the police, again, lie often when they testify, and that the NYPD, whenever they account of events, will release a story that protects what they consider to be the interest of the police department, not the public interest. It's reminiscent of what the Catholic Church did for decades, if not for centuries, when they were priests who engaged in predatory behavior, children.
They blame the victim. Yeah. We got to leave it there. This is important. This is important work. We're going to have to leave it there for now, but we hope that keep talking, because this is going to come back. It's going to happen again. And keep us posted on this case, too. I'd like, if we can figure out what happens to these people who are set up, brutalized, and already suffering.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO on Saturday, February 17th from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. for a special live remote broadcast of Keep Alive the Dream. Keep Alive the Dream is an annual celebration of the life and legacy of the Reverend